Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Email drivetime@rte.ie.
We're going back to the Vatican now, where Barry Lenihan is standing by. And Barry, I believe you have a guest there with you, Monsignor Enda Murphy.
Yes, Monsignor, you're working there in the Vatican. You worked closely with Pope Francis, and maybe quite the surprise, Habemus Papam, in the last few minutes.
Barry,
really,
sorry, we actually,
surprise,
for whatever reason,
it?
Barry, on our end, we're having a problem hearing the Monsignor.
Yeah, I think he might try again. Father, Father, you had a great line there about Robert Harris, which I don't think the listeners got.
No, for whatever reason, Barry, that line is not working for us at the moment. We can't hear the Monsignor properly. But I know that...
Okay, but the crowd, yes, the crowd has been coming here quite substantially over the last few minutes, Sarah. They've really flocked in to St. Peter's Square, everybody looking to get an eye of the new Pope, and really thoughts now turning to who it might be, whether it might be the Italian Pietro Parolin or the Maltese Cardinal Mario Grech. Isn't that right?
Indeed, we're just going to have to wait and see another few moments to see who comes out. Well, first of all, we'll wait for the proto-deacon of the Holy Roman Church to come out onto the central lodge of St. Peter's, and he will say those famous words, Habemus Papam, and then he'll announce to us the name of the Pope and the name the Pope has chosen to be known as. And it's at that moment we'll know then which cardinal has been elected to become Bishop of Rome and a pastor of the Universal Church. And we'll also know what name he'll be called by at that moment as well.
And as you said, I don't think a few technical gremlins with all the excitement, but it's Robert Harris, eat your heart out.
Yeah, Robert Harris, eat your heart out at a moment like this. Hollywood has nothing on this, really. It's been amazing all day. You know, yesterday evening there was the delay. People were wondering what's going on. Then this morning, the smoke actually came earlier than expected. And now, again, this evening, we were waiting maybe for around 7:30 Rome time, but at around 6 o'clock up went the smoke, and the crowds are starting to flood into the square.
Yeah, people really getting excited all together. On a wider level, we'll see who the new leader of the church is maybe at around before 6 o'clock, but there'll be a lot of talk going into this conclave that it was important for a quick decision to show that the church is united. There'll be maybe what someone described as unseemly commentary out of the congregations of cardinals. How important is it that this was a quick decision and perhaps one that might have been agreed much easier than initially thought?
Well, I think that once the cardinals went into, like, as they went through the general congregations, I think they were becoming more and more focused on the task ahead of them. And then especially when they went into the conclave yesterday, I think it's important to remember the conclave is not just a simple election. It's a ritual of prayer. It's like a liturgy. The whole thing is governed by a liturgical book called the Rite of the Conclave. So it's bracketed in prayer, and prayer suffuses the whole thing, and the election takes part in that context. So these cardinals, they were going up standing in front of Michelangelo's Last Judgment as they cast their ballot and saying, I call Jesus Christ as my witness, who will be my judge, that the person I am voting for, I deem, should be elected to be the pontiff. So, you know, that does concentrate the mind, and it would tend to push aside all the chattel and flotsam and jetsam that has been going on over the days. You know, my mother keeps telling us that two of the worst things that you can have in the world are calumny and detraction. It's still in the catechism. And unfortunately, over the last number of weeks, even in the Catholic media, maybe most especially sometimes in the Catholic media, we've had a lot of calumny and detraction, things which take away the good name of people without any foundation or
at all. fake news spread around Pietro Parolin's health. I think there was the resurfacing of sexual allegations against other cardinals as well, all coming through the media. But the other thing here as well is, as you touched upon, it is the Holy Spirit who decides, and it was said after the last conclave by the Archbishop of Vienna that only the Holy Spirit could have led to the speed at which Jose Bergoglio came from a name nobody knew to ultimately becoming Pope Francis. So the balcony behind us could ultimately throw up somebody we haven't discussed or heard of.
Indeed, my own boss in my own office, Cardinal Roach, when I asked him before he went into the conclave, what do you think of this? What do you think is going to happen? And he said, we already know who he is. It's just a question of picking him out. So sort of a Delphic answer that he gave. But yeah, once they're in there and it becomes clear what way it's moving, like, you know the Holy Spirit works through humans, weak and fragile and all as they are, but there's no other way for the Spirit to work, only in that way. And so through them, this decision is made, and, you know, they're doing it. You know, the constitution of John Paul II, Universi Dominicus Gregis, is quite clear that the cardinal should leave every other consideration behind except for the glory of God and the good of the church.
And I know you're from Fermanagh Manor originally, but before we head back to Dublin, is there anyone that you would like to see, or perhaps that you think would be maybe the Irish Church would like to see, given the special relationship it had with Pope John Paul II and Pope Francis?
Well, I think there are a number, like Cardinal Parolin. It's not that long since he was in Ireland for the episcopal ordination of Seamus Horgan as to be sent off as a nuncio in Africa. So Cardinal Parolin would be very aware of Ireland, the situation in Ireland. You know, whoever comes will have a care for the whole church, and that's the important thing.
Well, Monsignor Enda Murphy, thanks very much for joining us, rushing up the steps here to our broadcast point, overlooking St. Peter's Square here in the Vatican City. The helicopters are overhead, the crowds are still filing in, Sarah, and we should have the identity of the 267th Pope, perhaps within the next 20 minutes or so.
And indeed, as soon as that happens, Barry, we'll be back to you, and we'll be taking that announcement live here in Drive Time. Right now, though, we'll take a quick break.
Fed up with your tired tiles or dated bathroom? Refresh your home at the Tile Style Summer Sale. Enjoy 40% off all tiles in stock, including the stunning Porcelainosa collection. Plus, incredible offers on bathrooms, kitchens and wood flooring, even our newest arrivals. All in stock now and ready to go. Shop in-store at Ballymount or at tilestyle.ie. But hurry, only while stocks last. Limited exclusions apply. Tile Style. Dream homes made simple.
When it comes to your business, you want to move forward, upgrade, advance, expand, make it possible with Opel's award-winning commercial vehicle range. The Opel Combo, Vivaro and Movano in diesel or 100% electric. And now, all available with flexible payment options and a 5-year warranty. The Opel commercial vehicle range, carriers of possibilities. See opel.ie for details.
Make real summer savings at SuperValue. Like SuperValue Fresh Irish Pork Loin Roast, now half price. Pick up fresh barbecue meats, 3 for €10. Scan your Real Rewards card or app and get Bolt 2-in-1 57 wash selected range for €8. And water wipes 9-pack 540 piece, now €16. Make real summer savings at SuperValue.
On this week's Lyric Feature,
the story of singer Rachel Baptiste, who lit up the stage in Georgian Ireland, but has been written out of history for the last 200 years. Black Siren with me, Sive Downs, the Lyric Feature, Sunday at 6 p.m. on RTE Lyric FM.
Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich, winners of the Brokers Ireland Investment Excellence Award each year since 2014. Now that's reassuring.
Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with Sarah McInerney and Cormac O'Hara.
We're joined now by Brona McShane, who's an historian specialising in the history of women, gender and religion. And Brona, you're very welcome to the programme. I know that you know an awful lot about the conclave, how it works and what happens now. So can you talk us through what you would expect to happen?
Hi, Sarah. Yeah, thanks very much. Very exciting news coming out of St. Peter's Square this evening, and obviously much faster than anticipated the emergence of the white smoke this evening. So we know that the new Pope will now be preparing for the big reveal on St. Peter's balcony. He'll be spending some time in the Room of Tears, as it's known, which is a small antechamber off the Sistine Chapel, where he will don his white cassocks and prepare for really an extraordinary road ahead in terms of his leadership of the world's 1.4 billion Catholics at a time when the Church is facing a number of contentious issues and some divisions, some might say, within the Church more broadly. So as we say, we're awaiting the big revelation of who that individual will be, what the name that the new Pope will take, because, of course, we can read a lot into the choice of the name. Pope Francis, of course, taking his name after St. Francis of Assisi, the leader of the Franciscans, who avowed poverty and help of the poor, which was something that was very central to the late Pope's pontificate. So it will be a very interesting half an hour or so now as we watch and wait.
And what can we expect, or what would you like to see maybe when the new Pope does step out and is announced? Do we expect a speech? Will he address the crowd?
It's very hard to know. It really depends on the individual and their style. We know that Pope Francis was somebody who was very well versed at engaging with large crowds and kind of had a unique ability to connect with crowds. So it will be interesting to see, you know, those initial few moments when the new Pope does address the crowds on St. Peter's balcony, how he interacts, how he engages, what his first spoken words will be to the crowds gathered. So very exciting. And I'm sure that the crowds are only building in St. Peter's Square.
Yeah, and indeed, that's what Barry Lennon is saying. They're pouring into the square as we speak. We are deep in the realms of speculation as we await the name. But I do wonder, Brona, what do you make of the relatively quick turnaround and in all this talk about unity in advance of the vote?
Yeah, and I think one of your earlier speakers made reference to the general congregation meetings that were the meetings that were held by the cardinals in advance of the formal conclave starting just yesterday, which is hard to believe. But I think that going into the conclave yesterday, there was already a very clear sense of the key issues and the key topics that really needed to be front and centre in terms of the next Pope's agenda. So I think that the fact that we do have a relatively, a very quick result, really, is indicative of the fact that there is clarity among the cardinals in terms of the direction the Church needs to take. I don't think it will be any individual that is very extreme one way or the other. I think it's most likely to be somebody who's seen as a relative moderate in terms of the Church's teachings. So, it's all a guessing game at this stage, but interesting time.
I know there were some cardinals who weren't happy with this talk of unity. They say, you know, it might sound very good. This is, I'm quoting actually Cardinal Mike Inserzi of Canada, and he was one of Francis's closest advisors. And he was saying that this talk of unity, it sounds really good, but what it means, he said, is reversal.
Yes, and I think that they're interesting insights. I think even during Pope Francis's tenure as Pope, you know, there was not necessarily unity within the Church. I mean, even among progressives, Pope Francis had his critics. And of course, as we know, among the traditionalist cohort within the Church, he absolutely was criticised, especially around his decisions around divorced Catholics, his moves towards greater inclusion for the LGBTQ plus community, and he was heavily criticised. So, I think that the discourse around unity, I can understand this on the one hand, how that will actually play out. over the course of the tenure of the next Pope remains to be seen. I don't think we're maybe as unified as some might like to suggest.
And what then do you think about women's place in the church? And there's been an awful lot of discussion since Pope Francis passed away about, you know, what he said versus what he actually did when it came to women's role in the church. And if he couldn't get reforms across the line, do you think any new Pope is likely to try or to succeed?
I think the role of women in the church will be really one of the biggest telling factors in relation to how the next Pope either progresses the reforms of Pope Francis in terms of greater participation of women, or rolls back on that. So that's something I'll certainly be watching very carefully. I'll be very intrigued to know, once we know the identity of the individual, whether or not they have spoken out on women in the church and what their views have been and how they've expressed them in the past. While Pope Francis, of course, did have his critics, especially from women's groups within the church that wanted to see even greater participation, and especially around the question of women's ordination in the church, I think when we think about the church in its long-term history, we are talking about a 2,000-year-old institution. Within his 12-year pontificate, I think Pope Francis did manage to make some significant strides. Of course, we have a long road to go, and there's no question about that.
Brona, thank you for joining us with your insights. I really appreciate your time. That's Brona McShane.
See how good TV can be with the OLED TV from LG. The LG range gives you superb picture quality, so you can enjoy films and sport like you have never seen them before. For more information, go online to powercity.ie today.
Your dreams don't get smaller just because you get older. Whether it's upgrading your home or returning to education, there may be many things you'd still like to do. If you're a homeowner over 60, a lifetime mortgage secured against your house from Spry Finance could help you to keep enjoying life. Of course, before you make up your mind, we want you to have peace of mind. So talk to us at 01 5822 580, or visit spryfinance.ie, because life never gets old. Over 60s only. Product eligibility criteria apply. Senior Money Mortgages Ireland DAC, trading as Seniors Money, Spry Finance and Spry, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Join me, David McCullough,
Katie Hannan,
and me, Fran McNulty, for a new podcast from RTE News,
where we'll be discussing the stories of the day from home and abroad,
as we talk to reporters with the inside track and guests with expert analysis,
looking at what's happening and why, asking the questions you're thinking.
Behind the Story, an RTE News podcast.
Available now on RTE Radio Player and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, let's get into it.
It's almost 6 o'clock on RTE Radio 1 with Dundeal Motors. From luxury saloons to seven-seaters, the right car for you is on dundeal.ie, home of all of Ireland's trusted dealerships.
Text 51551. Drive time on RTE Radio 1.
All eyes on the balcony in St. Peter's Basilica as we await the announcement of who the next Pope will be. We'll cross to St. Peter's Square now, and Barry Lenehan.
Yes, buonasera once again, Cormac, from St. Peter's Square. We're just across from the balcony here at the moment. We can see the two red curtains parted, where the new Pope will emerge shortly. It took around an hour and 10 minutes for Pope Francis to emerge after he was selected at the conclave in 2013. The white smoke just going up at around 5 minutes, 6 minutes past five. So maybe we should expect something very shortly. But I am joined here by Owen Gormley of the Irish College here in Rome. You've been around here, you know this place well. How do you sum up what we've just witnessed?
It's such a historic day. It's a day of great joy, great excitement, and a new chapter for the Catholic Church. And we're just very excited to see who does step out on the balcony.
And as a young man yourself, who are you hoping for?
I suppose I don't have names in mind. I just really hope that the legacy of Pope Francis even is continued. His humility in the office was something quite remarkable, and his ability to reach people on the peripheries of the church and the peripheries of the world. So someone who's really in touch with that aspect of the papacy, I really hope I hope we can see someone who can carry on that legacy.
And Pope Francis, when he was selected in 2013, he famously chose not to wear the papal red shoes, yes. The Bozzetta, yes, which are as well the cape worn only by the Pope and Cardinals. He put on his own silver pectoral cross as well, yeah, rather than a gold one. So indeed. Are you hoping we see a more humble church with the next pontiff?
Yeah, I think you know, we will judge the pontiff on his actions and not necessarily his dress, and ultimately we will all be judged by the Lord. And so that's really the frame of mind that we hope anyway the pontiff will come into this office with. So yeah, we're hoping for someone, as I said, to carry on that legacy of Francis and his remarkable humility.
And one of the big issues, obviously, Francis looked at reform of the church towards women, towards more inclusive, towards gay and LGBTQ Catholics as well. Would you be hoping that whoever emerges will continue on that path?
Pope Francis opened the synodal process, and I think the synodal process has been a great... It's really been a great way for people to be heard in the church, from all different walks of life, all different countries. And the Vatican, reading about the synodal process, they've really done a great job to hear the views of the people of faith from across the world. So I hope to have a pope that, yes, that listens to the faithful, to the people of God, but it is also able to really, really lead with charisma and lead with, as I said, that humility as well.
And with maybe a declining mass attendance in Europe at the moment, and in Ireland, maybe amongst young people as well, how important is it that whoever emerges is a good evangelizer, has maybe the charisma of a Francis, of a John Paul II?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, evangelization can come in many forms. It's you know, some of the most memorable acts of Pope Francis were his acts of mercy. I think of the young child running into his arms at a papal audience. And so evangelization is not necessarily you know, the words you speak, but the actions you make. And I think Pope Francis really led in such a demonstrative way. And so I think it's so important for the people of Europe and the people of the world to have a pope who will do similar.
Well, Owen Gormley of the Irish College here in Rome, thank you very much. So Cormac, thousands, tens of thousands here behind me looking towards that balcony, tens of millions across the globe, all anxiously awaiting the identity of the next pontiff.
Okay, Barry Lenihan, we'll be back to you shortly. Thank you very much indeed. I'm joined now by Gina Minzi, theologian. Gina, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
I'd love to hear your thoughts as we await the name of the new Pope. It's a critical moment for the Catholic Church, isn't it? Will the new Pope continue the liberal outlook of Pope Francis, or return to a more conservative church of Pope Benedict the 16th?
Well, to be honest, I prefer the word reform rather than sort of liberal conservatives. I think labels are easy, but I actually think what he was about was, as Francis took the name St. Francis of Assisi, who felt he had this message from God to rebuild his church. And I think that's what Francis was about. I think reform was where he was at. Because the vote has been so quick, I think there was obviously a great consensus. And I'd be surprised if it wasn't Cardinal Parolin, but I could be completely wrong, who was, if you like, almost the deputy pope during the reign of Pope Francis. So, I mean, I think the fact that it was, you know, I think last night, I know, yesterday at the Mass before they went into the Sistine Chapel, Giovanni Battista Re, who was sort of the, if you like, the dean of the College of Cardinals, everybody commented on the fact that at the sign of peace, he gave Parolin a very big hug on the altar, and he was heard to say double best wishes.
Okay.
And I think that was almost a sign, but you know,
So can I ask then, to use your own words there, Gina, would Parolin be seen as a reformer a la Pope Francis?
Well, I think whoever you know has got this enormous really challenging task will be in the same way as Pope Francis. I don't think there's no going back to the old days. I think the church is on a path to reform and renewal. And I think, I think we have the map, we have the roadmap from Francis. And I think whoever it is will continue that probably in a slightly different way. But I think...
Why do you think that? Why do you say that so confidently, it seems to me?
Well, I suppose, from listening to other people and from the fact that, all over the world, even though not every person in the church attended a synod meeting, the consensus all over the world was going in a similar direction. And I think, I think it's slow, it's cumbersome in a way, and you think there's 1.4 million Catholics throughout the world, throughout the globe, with many different, cultural backgrounds, even though they all subscribe to the gospel values. I think it will be different in different places. But I think that maybe was the direction Francis was going in. I hope, and I think that aligns with people in the church and also people, I think, outside the church, that we would sort of have this moral voice who's unafraid mm-hmm. going forward.
Can I ask you that, though? It might mean that different things to different parts of the world or different parts of the world within the Catholic Church. What will it mean, do you think, if it is Cardinal Parolin or Pizza Bella, for example, for the Catholic Church in Ireland, with dwindling attendances, a declining priesthood, an ageing congregation and church participants and so on? What will it mean?
Well,
what could it mean?
You've put your finger on, enormous challenges in Ireland and elsewhere in terms of the Catholic Church. But I think, again, Francis lived the gospel, and I think he has urged and actually ordered the bishops around the world who've always had autonomy in their own diocese, but I don't think we saw it greatly exercised in many places, and you could even say in Ireland, that they can organise, they can, reform the church the way that is appropriate for where they are. So I think, the bishops of the world have been really mandated by Francis to step up and get on with it. And I think, up to now, perhaps they haven't taken on the role that they actually had the authority to do. And it will all depend, will they do it? But, there's no longer a way of sort of, pray, pay and obey used to be a very old-fashioned cliche. The people of God, the people who follow, the insights of Vatican II, mm-hmm. Finally, after all those years, Francis was the first pope who took those insights in real terms and related it to the world. I mean, there's no point in relating it to a world that's past. You have to relate it to the world where we find ourselves in. And I think that's what Francis did. And I think, the last speaker commented on, action. I think what people do is much more important than what people say or perhaps what they say they believe in. We can all have a variety of beliefs, but it's how we live out those beliefs that is really, the litmus test of whether we are practicing Christians or not.
Indeed, and we'll await and see in just a second. It is incredible. I don't know, Jean, if you're looking at the scenes from St. Peter's Square.
Of course
I don't know if you had the screen in front of you there. The numbers and the flags from all over the world, the US, Brazil, Venezuela, Spain, are just a number of flags that I'm seeing in the last few moments or so. Can I ask you this, though? We're moments away, by the way, from the announcement of the new, the new pope. Can I ask you this? Will the new pope appoint a kind of a cabinet of sorts, or is there a permanent officialdom or staff there to support him?
Well, interestingly, Francis had a group of, I think, six very significant cardinals who acted as his advisors, and they were from around the world. And I think that's really, really important. I think no one person can take on this task on their own. And I think it's important that they have a global reach. And again, if you think of the things most associated with Francis, he was always saying, we must listen to people. And, I think his reign in one respect was short, and he was almost trying to turn around a juggernaut, if you like. Mm-hmm. But I think he has reached out to the world. Remember, he talked about going to the peripheries, going to the marginalised. And I think that sort of explains perhaps the volume of people who are in the square from all parts of the world.
Okay, well,
I see an Irish flag now.
Well, I do see an. Oh, it's an Indian flag, isn't it?
I think it's an Indian flag.
Well, I just thought the same thing briefly. But host of flags, I'd say most nations in the world are represented, or many of them anyway. Gina Menzies, theologian, thank you very much indeed. We may speak to you and get your reaction when we have the name a little bit later on. We're moments away, as I say, from the announcement of the new Pope.
Okay.
Gina, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
There's an estimated 50,000 people gathered at this stage in St. Peter's Square. And we're going to go back there now and to Barry Lenehan. Barry, what's happening?
Yeah, the throng, the crowds at St. Peter's Square thronged, and flags of every hue and kind there being waved in St. Peter's Square. The faithful flocking en masse in the matter of a few moments. I see Spanish flags, a Ukrainian flag, a flag for the Philippines, Poland, a Portugal scarf, an Indian flag, all nationalities, and men of faith, different priests of different orders, nuns as well, all coming into St. Peter's Square. And looking at the aerial shot here, pictures in front of me, it really is full the whole way down away from St. Peter's. Monsignor Enda Murphy is back with me. You were out there sampling the scenes there a few moments ago. We saw the Swiss guards march through the middle of the crowd and the singing of the Italian national anthem as well. And that really got the crowd excited and everyone looking forward to this now.
Yeah, I don't think there's a rooftop in this area that doesn't have many people perched on it at the moment. And, you know, we had the Italian anthem, Fratelli d'Italia, and then we also had the papal anthem, the national anthem of the Vatican City State, played as well. So it's still a great sense of anticipation here, waiting for the Cardinal Protodeacon to come out and put us out of our misery. But, you know, I think Bernini really knew what he was doing when he designed St. Peter's Square, because just over a week ago we had the funeral of Pope Francis, which was, you know, all the great and the good from all over the world. But this evening, it's here comes everybody. It's the ordinary people who have turned up here to welcome the new bishop of this city. So it's just that great sense of those two great colonnades of arms embracing the whole of humanity, and they're all crowding into St. Peter's Square this evening to hear what the news is going to be.
And it's amazing how quick the square filled up.
Yeah, well, people have been waiting. You know, once the news of the white smoke went around, you know, people, I know that some of the church, you know, the pontifical universities here in Rome, that had said if there comes news of the white smoke, all classes are suspended and you can make your way immediately to St. Peter's Square. So people will be coming from all over, obviously many to see who the new bishop of Rome is.
There is an Irish flag there. I think you were speculating about that back in studio. I see the Irish tricolour in there amongst it all, beside a flag from Ecuador and Venezuela as well. It is being said that the new pope has been picked quicker than his predecessor, Pope Francis, but you're not so sure about that. It still could have taken five ballots.
I think it probably did take five ballots. That's the same as it took for Pope Francis. Pope Benedict took four. It was likely to be either tonight or tomorrow morning, I'd say, and which, you know, I think they knew what they were doing, and it probably became clear quickly enough as the ballots wore on where the momentum was moving inside the Sistine Chapel.
The Room of Tears, where the new pontiff goes in after being picked by his compatriots, the other cardinals, that is a momentous moment, isn't it?
It is. It's a very small room. It's just a sort of a little antechamber, and your listeners may have seen on the social media the Vatican released pictures of it being prepared with three different sizes of cassock and the various accoutrements, etc., the white cassock that the Pope will appear on if he's small, medium or large. And I'm sure there's a tailor on hand to make any last minute adjustments.
On that, we featured on yesterday's programme, Father, the Gamarelli store, which made cassocks for popes going right back to 1798, but they haven't been listed on this occasion. And it was confirmed to me last night around here in the hostelries near the Vatican that indeed that Pope Francis had requested that the unused cossacks from before be kept on for the new pope. So thinking of the small details,
tweaking small details. I think the person or the tailor that they've asked this time is a guy called Mancinelli, who's very even closer again to the Vatican. He's well into his 70s now, but there was again pictures of him sitting in his shop sewing the final threads into one of the white cassocks and just telling his story. You know, it's a popular place for clergy who are in town who want to pop in to buy a clerical shirt or something else.
We focus a lot on Europeans thus far, but it's only 43% of the cardinals are from Europe, and the church is booming in terms of numbers in Africa and Asia. Yeah. Could we witness history, do you think, in the next few moments, an Asian pope or perhaps the first black African in 1500 years?
Well, anything. Pope Francis loved to say that our God is a God of surprises, so why not? We'll know soon enough. But I think that obviously what the cardinals have done this evening is elect a bishop of Rome, but have also elected a pastor of the universal church. And I think that's important, that this is a universal church. So it's not just a European church. You've got Asia, Africa, the Americas, the Antipodes, everywhere. So that's important to bear in mind, and we could see a surprise indeed. Yeah. And it'd be nice if they would if we could find out anytime soon.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, I think you're reflecting our impatience, all of us watching, Father. Can I ask you this though? Whoever it will be, whatever man will emerge onto the balcony there, will have the power and the authority of the office of the papacy behind them, of course. But in terms of being a voice for peace in a very uncertain, aggressive, violent world at the moment, surely personal charisma counts an awful lot. I mean, who do you think, who would you like to see, and in terms of character? Barry, there's an announcement, is there?
We think something could be imminent if Monsignor wants to pick
it
up.
The doors are opening. The doors are opening.
There's a bit of a kerfuffle at the back. Oh, here we go. Okay. The doors are opening.
All right, we'll go live to the Vatican.
The new pontiff has emerged out onto the balcony over St. Peter's Square. We're going to listen in now.
That's the cardinal. That's the cardinal protodeacon coming to announce.
That's the cardinal protodeacon who's emerged at the moment.
Gaudium Magnum.
He will announce the name.
Habemus Papam. Eminentissimum, ac reverendissimum Dominum, Dominum Robertum Franciscum, Sancte Romanae Ecclesiae, Cardinalem Prevost. Qui sibi nomen imposuit Leonem decimum quartum.
Been announced from the balcony overlooking St. Peter's Square, Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost from the United States. He was created a cardinal by Pope Francis. His pastoral line, we understand, is pro Francis. He's a 68-year-old Augustinian.
Well, there you go. The news there, Robert Francis Prevost, as you hear Sharon Tobin saying, has been announced as the new Pope. Barry.
Yes, well, it's not overly a major surprise. La Repubblica had reported, as we mentioned, on Claire Byrne, where perhaps I may have butchered the new Pope's surname by calling it Prevost. It had been said that his stock was rising over the last few weeks amongst the cardinals in those congregations of cardinals, and that it was between him and Pietro Parolin. But it is an American Pope for the first time ever, although he is somebody with 20 years pastoral experience in Peru and in Latin America, and with approximately 14 Latin American cardinals picking whom would be the next Pope. Perhaps that stood to him when all was said and done. Monsignor Enda Murphy beside me, you said one word when Robert Prevost came out, Pope Leo XIV he is now. Wow.
Wow is right. You're right, his name was mentioned, and he had been gaining currency over towards the latter end of this whole process. But it is history making. We were talking about, you know, the God of surprises doesn't fail to disappoint again. And out he came, he's coming out now, he'll give the Orbi blessing shortly, but he's from Chicago. And an Augustinian monk, friar, and he was for 12 years the worldwide head of the Augustinian order. He worked here in this very building that we are on the top of at the moment, was where he worked for 12 years.
The
Augustinian friary beside the Vatican was where he worked for years. He would have been very well aware and acquainted with all the Irish Augustinians over the year. I'm thinking of great Irish Augustinian here in Rome, Father Brian O'Sullivan, who worked with him closely here when he was the Superior General of the Augustinian Order. And in these recent years, Pope Francis called him here to the Vatican to take over the dicastery for bishops. So he knows what's happening all over the world. He was responsible for ensuring that Pope Francis's vision of what a bishop should be would be implemented throughout the world. And I could see that's the cardinals, in that sense, have chosen continuity. But also his name is important. There's old Latin saying, nomen est omen. The name is an omen. So Leo IV, the last Leo was Leo XIII. He was he reigned for a very long time. And he was the Pope. It'd be interesting to hear the Pope's reasons for choosing Leo as his name. He could be going back maybe to Leo the Great, but his immediate predecessor with that name, Giacchino Pecci, he was the one who really formalized the Church's social teaching. Rerum Novarum was the encyclical, and it was the one that started, you know, the rights of workers and labor and all of that. So it will be interesting to see what his reasons for choosing Leo is.
An American Pope, we've never had one before, and given the geopolitical situation and President Trump and all that's going on there, what do you think the reaction will be?
Yeah, well, certainly, there was many people who said that there could never be a Pope from the United States. Well, there's another never could, which has bitten the dust. I think that Cardinal Prevost, Pope Leo XIV, as he is now, every time you hear anyone talking about him, they'll say to you, he's a very practical man, he's a holy man, but he's not someone who gets excited or flapped easily, you know. And I'd say, you know, dealing with a worldwide order, then being a missionary, you know, being a bishop down in Peru for all those years, and now his experience here, I think he'll be all of that training, if you like, that he's gone through has prepared him for this moment and to meet, obviously, the geopolitical moment. Like you were talking earlier, Barry, or one of the presenters back in studio were talking about the way the world is at the minute in terms of war and the need for peace. Well, obviously, one of the last things the cardinals did before they went into the conclave was to issue a message calling for world peace, calling and noting all these places around the world that are marked by war.
69-year-old Robert Prevost, now Pope Leo.
Okay, Barry Lenehan at the Vatican, thank you very much indeed. I'm joined by Bishop Lahey of Limerick. You're very welcome, Bishop, to the programme. What's your reaction?
Oh, I'm delighted. He is somebody I was wondering, might he become the Pope, because I met him last October at the Synod and previously. He's a very calm character, but somebody who you couldn't but admire when you meet him. He radiated a certain calmness, and at the same time, you know, he was an American, so he has efficiency, definitely, but he's a huge experience of South America. He combines the worldwide experience of being the head of the Augustinian Order, which he was. So he's coming from a spirituality, which is also going to mean a lot to people. If I'm not mistaken, I did have one or two brief conversations with him. If I'm not mistaken, he said to me he was in Ireland because he was head of the Augustinians. So I think he probably did a visit. Now, I may be wrong on that, so I don't want to lead people astray.
Yeah.
But I have a recollection of that.
Okay.
So I'm delighted.
And what should we read into the fact that he's an Augustinian? What kind of a pope will he be, do you think?
Well, I mean, for the start, it means that the cardinals have decided after a Jesuit pope, who then obviously emphasised as well, Saint Francis, this idea of having a pope from a religious order with a spirituality is a good thing. I think people like that. Of course, Saint Augustine is one of the great thinkers in the life of the church. And Saint Augustine in his teaching emphasised enormously love. I know other things too, but certainly love was central to the spirituality of Saint Augustine, which the Augustinians took up. They have a huge, long tradition in the history of the church. So I think this new pope will bring a lot of that with him. As I say, practical, efficient, at the same time spiritual, and he will radiate a peace to people. And I think that's what's going to come across.
Yeah.
And given that he has these spiritual resources in him, as well as a huge experience, I think that's going to be a great service to the church.
I've been scrambling, Bishop, to read that the last Pope, Leo, was known as a social pope. He was known as an intellectual,
yes.
The Pope of the Workers, they called him, I think. This is at the turn of the 20th century, 1878 mm-hmm. to 1903 or
yes,
so.
Yes, I mean, it was very important because, you know, the 19th century, the church was faced with enormous challenges. We always seem to be faced with challenges, but it is true, the 19th century had huge challenges because you had the whole area of industrial revolution, the Marxist philosophy taking hold, evolutionary philosophy taking hold, droves of people leaving the church because it wasn't up to date.
So they were the challenges. They were the challenges. And I wonder if this new pope, Pope Leo XIV, can reduce declining attendances and priesthood, for example.
Yeah, well, I think what he'll do is obviously the fact he's taken up the name of Leo is a sense that he too wants to continue responding to challenges and with deep thought, which is what Leo XIII was famous for, and at the same time really opening to new challenges. Mm-hmm. And here he's coming, and I think this is something we can look forward to.
Oh, okay.
I think there's a visual of him coming now, so I think people will sense themselves when they see him.
For
but
sure.
He's a calm.
Bishop Leahy, stay with us, if you will. We'll have more reaction in just a moment.
Yeah, indeed. We're joined on the line now. Well, sorry, actually, I think we're going to be going back to the Vatican because it looks like the new Pope is about to arrive, indeed has arrived on the balcony.
And he emerges onto the balcony of St. Peter's Basilica, waving to the crowds and smiling. Cardinal Robert Prevost will be known as Pope Leo XIV. And the crowds underneath, throngs of people now with St. Peter's Square full. And we're seeing images of young people with their smartphones.
A lot of emotion. You know, a lot of people crying.
And it's quite dramatic, isn't it? And the pageantry of it as well, with the Swiss Guard and so on. It is a dramatic moment. He seems quite composed, Sarah.
He's waiting, I think, for the crowd to settle, but he's also enjoying his moment. People there waiting all day for the last couple of days, and I think song is breaking out in St. Peter's Basilica.
The setting is actually spectacular to look at visually. Because you have the sun making its slow descent over the historical buildings around the Vatican. And Pope Leo XIV is, as you were saying, Sarah, waiting for the crowds to find a little bit of hush, I think, to make his first utterances.
He could be waiting a while.
He could well be, waving with both hands now as they applaud him and lift flags. And I see an Irish flag in the crowd. Would he step forward to the microphone? The microphone hasn't emerged as of yet. This man is an American, but he has significant experiences in Peru and in South America generally. He's an Augustinian. And as you heard from Bishop Leahy, he thinks he visited Ireland as well. The question now will be, will he return to Ireland as Pope?
And I think one of the interesting things about him actually is that while he is an American, he spent an awful lot of his time outside of America. As we've heard, he spent quite a lot of time in Peru, 2 decades in Peru, where he became a bishop and indeed is a naturalised citizen of Peru, and then rose to lead an international religious order. He was actually working in one of the most influential Vatican posts until the death of Pope Francis. He was running the office that actually selects and manages bishops globally.
Of course he is, indeed.
We can see there Pope Leo XIV quite moved by the tens of thousands of people there in the square. It must be quite a moment.
You can just hear Sharon Tobin, who is in the Vatican as well, in the background there. And we have a microphone. The Pope is preparing to speak.
La pace sia con tutti voi. Fratelli, sorelle carissimi, questo è il primo saluto del Cristo risorto, il buon pastore che ha dato la vita per il gregge di Dio. Anch'io vorrei che questo saluto di pace entrasse nel vostro cuore, raggiungesse le vostre famiglie, a tutte le persone, ovunque siano, a tutti i popoli, a tutta la terra. La pace sia con voi. Questa è la pace di Cristo risorto, una pace disarmata e una pace disarmante, umile e perseverante. Proviene da Dio, Dio che ci ama a tutti incondizionalmente. Ancora conserviamo nei nostri orecchi quella voce debole ma sempre coraggiosa di Papa Francesco, che benediva Roma.
To the voice of the weak voice, like Father Pope Francis asked us to do.
Il Papa che benediva Roma dava la sua benedizione al mondo intero, quella mattina del giorno di Pasqua. Consentitemi di dar seguito a quella stessa benedizione. Dio ci vuole bene. Dio vi ama tutti. E il male non prevarrà.
Speaking of the blessing
siamo
that Pope Francis gave to the world at Christmas, the greeting of the risen Lord. He reminds
pertanto,
us that we are all in the hands
paura,
of the Lord.
Uniti, mano nella mano
not to
con
have
Dio
fear, but to be united.
Tra di noi.
Hand
andiamo
in hand
avanti.
With God. Who walks with
siamo
us,
discepoli
let us go
di
forward.
Cristo. Cristo ci precede.
We are disciples of Christ.
Il mondo ha bisogno
Christ
della
goes
sua
before
luce.
Us.
L'umanità
the world
necessita
has the need of his light.
Di lui come il ponte per essere raggiunta da Dio e dal suo amore.
Humanity needs him as the bridge between
aiutateci
it and the love of
anche
God.
Voi, poi gli uni gli altri, a costruire i ponti. Con il dialogo, con l'incontro, unendoci tutti per essere un solo popolo, sempre in pace.
To have a sense of encounter and meeting, to build a one people who are always in peace. So this is all a tribute to the work and ministry of Pope Francis, and his work in constructing bridges. And very notable that he repeats that thing about going forward. We walk together.
Con fratelli cardinali che hanno scelto me per essere successore di Pietro
di
camminare
him.
Insieme a voi come Chiesa unita cercando
again,
sempre
to together with
la pace
them and with
la
us
giustizia
as a united church,
cercando
always seeking
sempre
the peace,
lavorare
justice.
Come uomini e donne fedeli a Gesù Cristo, senza paura,
always working together as men and women faithful to Jesus without fear,
missionari,
in order to proclaim the gospel.
Sono un figlio di Sant'Agostino, agostiniano.
I'm a son of Saint Augustine. I'm an Augustinian.
Che ha detto, con voi sono cristiano e per voi vescovo. In questo senso possiamo tutti camminare insieme verso quella patria,
so we are all called to walk together,
la quale Dio ci ha preparato,
which that homeland that God has prepared for us.
Alla chiesa di Roma un saluto speciale.
A special greeting for the Church of Rome, and you can see that's being received very warmly by the crowd.
Dobbiamo cercare insieme come essere una chiesa missionaria, una chiesa che costruisce ponti e dialogo, sempre aperta a ricevere, come questa piazza con le braccia aperte a tutti, tutti coloro che hanno bisogno della nostra carità, la nostra presenza, il dialogo, l'amore.
E se mi
permette anche una palabra, un saludo.
And now he's turning into Spanish. I'm afraid I can't help you with translating that.
A todos aquellos, en modo particular a mi querida diócesis de Chiclayo en el Perú.
And he's greeting his diocese in Chiclayo in Peru.
Donde un pueblo fiel ha acompañado a su obispo, ha compartido su fe y ha dado tanto, tanto para seguir siendo iglesia fiel de Jesucristo. A tutti voi, fratelli e sorelle, di Roma, di Italia, di tutto il mondo, vogliamo essere una chiesa sinodale, una chiesa che cammina, una chiesa che cerca sempre la pace, cerca sempre la carità, cerca sempre di essere vicino, specialmente a coloro che soffrono.
That is always close, especially to those who suffer.
Oggi, il giorno della supplica alla Madonna di Pompei.
Today, usually, is the day where
Nostra Madre Maria vuole
making a supplication to
sempre camminare
to the Virgin
con noi,
of Pompeii,
stare
our
vicino,
mother.
Aiutarci con la sua intercessione e il suo amore.
People,
allora vorrei pregare insieme a voi. Preghiamo insieme per questa nuova missione,
so
però per tutta la Chiesa, per la pace del mondo.
Rome,
e chiediamo questa grazia speciale di Maria, nostra Madre. Ave Maria, piena di grazia, il Signore è con te. Tu sei benedetta fra le donne e benedetto è il frutto del tuo seno, Gesù. Santa Maria, Madre di Dio, prega per noi peccatori, adesso e nell'ora della nostra morte. Amen.
The crowd responding with a very vociferous amen at the end of Pope Leo's prayer.
Well, there you go. A somewhat translated the speech of Pope Leo XIV. We didn't catch it all, but I think we did certainly get the gist of what he was saying. And we have Archbishop Jeremiah Martin on the line. And you're very welcome, Archbishop. Thank you for joining us. As I say, we didn't catch all the speech, but there's a clear thread of unity and peace going through what he had to say.
Well, obviously, you know, he began by stressing very much the greeting, which was the greeting of Jesus to his disciples after the resurrection, peace be with you. And it's very clear that he's a person who's going to be very committed to working and using the abilities and the power that he has to bring about peace in the world. It's also interesting that the second part, where he spoke in Spanish, and mentioned specially the diocese where he'd been a bishop for about 10 years in Peru. So he's has a strong tradition of Latin American spirituality and of the Latin American church. What you can see is he's an extremely calm man. Mm. You know, I was surprised when his name appeared. But I think probably if anybody's surprised, it's he himself, because I don't think in any way he was expecting this. He's always led a rather quiet, reserved life. He's a very calm person. I think this has been said before. A very humble person. You know, people will say various things about the new pope, but I can say one thing. I can tell you where he bought his groceries, because he went and bought them himself, even as a cardinal. He lived in a very, very simple life. And I think that's going to be very much the mark of this man. Nothing very dramatic about him personally, but a systematic, careful, thoughtful, kind man who is very clearly determined to lead the church along the path. You know, he was brought to Rome as prefect of the Congregation for Bishops by Pope Francis. Mm. And he was very clearly the choice of Pope Francis for that. And I think that's going to be you know, part of his style.
And from what you're saying there about him buying his own groceries and indeed from his speech there as well, it does seem that he resembles Francis, at least in his commitment to the poor and to migrants and in that humble approach.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about that. Now, the choice of the name Leo the 14th, you know, Pope Leo the 13th was quite a pioneer in many ways in what was called at that stage social Catholicism. He wrote this encyclical Rerum Novarum, where he addressed the new things of society and the world. It was in its time an extraordinary document, which brought together a lot of the streams and reflections of you know, modern European social thinking at the time. So I think that's also going to be a clear part of his it's amazing to watch the effect and the emotion that there is in St. Peter's Square as well. I was taken by surprise by the rapidity of the election and taken by surprise of this man. But you can see an extraordinary serenity in his.
Yeah, as you say, he does appear to be very calm given the monumental nature of what is happening to him right now. Can I just ask you about where he's likely to stand on some of the more contentious issues? I know that he hasn't said a whole lot, for example, about gay, lesbian, bisexual people, but in 2012 he talked about, he lamented, in fact, the Western news media and popular culture fostering sympathy for beliefs and practices that were at odds with the gospel, and he cited at that time the homosexual lifestyle. Now that's a long time ago, that's 13 years ago. Do we know where his beliefs are at the moment?
He's not a person who has been making statements on many subjects, you know. He's very much you know, he's a bishop, he's become the Bishop of Rome. He's not sort of a political, a diplomat. He's very much now. He would certainly have followed the line of Pope Francis in being caring, thoughtful to people, you know, you can see there's no tone of arrogance in the man there himself.
Okay.
I think that will be a mark of the way he works.
Archbishop, stay on the line if you don't mind.
We have Father Tony Egan now, who's former prior provincial of the Augustinian community, with us. Father Egan, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
I'm keen to talk to you and get your view of the new Pope, Robert Prevost, the Cardinal, now Pope Leo the 14th, because you met him, I think, when he was in Ireland. Is that right?
Yes, he came on an official visitation as prior general of the Augustinians. So he would have visited all of the provinces of the Augustinian world, if I can put it that way. Mm-hmm. And we were no exception. So I met him when he came here. Now, I was not prior provincial at that time.
Okay.
I was just a simple foot soldier, but he would have visited all our communities in Ireland, and I will have met him in that context.
May I ask, how did you find him as a man, as a person, and as a cardinal then?
A good man, a quiet man, a very bright man, I have to say. A good man, a kind man, a gentleman, very committed to his office as prior general, but a very relaxed man. I think you can see that on the television
that
there.
That certainly comes across, Father.
He's a very quiet, humble man. There's no airs and never was any airs and graces about him. And just related well to the friars, the Augustinians, whenever and wherever he met them.
And he mentioned, of course, since I'm talking to an Augustinian, I'm sure you were keen listening intently when he said, I'm the son of St. Augustine, who said famously, for you I'm a bishop, but with you I am a Christian. Together we'll walk towards that homeland that God has prepared for us.
Correct.
Can I ask you about this, though, and the significance of what he said when he addressed people and he said, to all the world, we want to be a church that's synodal, that works together for peace, charity and love, always close, especially to those who suffer. What do you think he had in mind there?
I'd say he had pretty much what Pope Francis sort of had in mind, I would think. The poor, the marginalised, migrants, pretty much along those lines. But he will be a pope for everyone. Catholics, non-Catholics, Christians, just the general broad humanity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has a good heart. He's a good heart.
Will you stay with me, Father Tony Egan? I have former Archbishop Dermot Martin with us as well, along with Bishop Brendan Leahy of Limerick. And I might return to Brendan Leahy, if I may, Bishop, for 1 second and get your reaction, further reaction to that. And what he said, he wants the church to walk together as a united church, seeking peace and justice, he said, working together as men and women without fear, proclaiming the gospel. Do you think that women within the church will be listening to the new pope saying, well, I hope that men and women will be, and women especially, will be able to take a more active role in the participative church under this new pope?
Yeah, so well, the first thing is I think he will be a good listener, and that is a very important feature of any pope, and he will be that. Certainly he is very committed to the synodality process that we've had running up and running, and I think he will follow along. He'll be very sensitive to the issues that emerge there, one of them being the question of women in the church, of course. He will be very sensitive to that. Obviously now he's a different personality to Pope Francis, but in his own deep, silent way, I think he will bring forward a whole new reflection on these questions as well. And he'll do it in a way that will try as much as possible to be bridge building and bringing ahead this dialogue. But he talked there, I used the word, I think, dialogue 2 or 3 times, which I found interesting, that will be a feature of him. I think he will try and enter into dialogue as much as possible with people.
Yeah, and Archbishop, I might bring you back in on that point. What are the challenges that he faces now? What sort of church is he coming into, the new pope?
Well, he's coming into a church which is very different around the world. The situation of the church in Ireland is very different to the church in Latin American countries. There are different challenges, but the big challenge is the challenge of faith and belief, and what exactly the Pope is. The Pope isn't going to be isn't a political leader, but he's one who can bring the message of Jesus through the way he lives and the way he speaks, to call people to a different way of living together. I think his mention there of synodality, it's very clear that he wants to follow in the line of Pope Francis, and I think that's probably why he was elected. The fact that he was elected so quickly is also a sign that he enjoys a great strength of unity among the cardinals. You know, there are many divisions in the church, and there are many people. You know, somebody said to me that even in the last few days, a lot of the discussions in Rome, there was a certain antagonism and uncertainty. I think this is a man who people will unite around him, mm-hmm. please God.
Can I ask you, Archbishop Dermot Martin, Donald Trump wanted the New York Cardinal to become Pope. I don't know if he was serious or not, but he did mention, I think, Timothy Dolan. He didn't get the New York Cardinal, but he certainly got a U.S. Pope now. Do you think that matters in any way? Because there's a very vocal, stringent, some would say politically right-wing leaning element of the Catholic Church in the US. Do you think that will have any sway or hold any sway at all?
I think that, you know, somebody, I said he's the least American of the American candidates to be Pope. And I think, you know, the fact that he chooses Pope Leo and the name Leo, again, this concept of social Christianity, is a clear indication that he is not a person who endorses right-wing politics. I think this is very that the name himself mm-hmm. is to place himself in a long tradition of a church which is committed to the poor, but also to work and workers. I think this is one of the areas where he clearly will be very different to much of the American political leadership.
Okay. Well, similar to the Pope of the Worker, the former Pope Leo XIII, as we mentioned earlier in the programme. Dermot Martin, thank you very much indeed. Bishop Brendan Leahy, thank you as well, of Limerick. And Father Tony Egan, my thanks to you. We'll have more reaction after the break.
Tweet at DriveTimeRTE.
We're going to Chicago now and to Heidi Schlumpf, who is senior correspondent with the National Catholic Reporter. And Heidi, you're very welcome and thank you for joining us. I believe you know the new Pope.
I don't know him personally, but I'm very excited that we have someone from Chicago.
And what do you think about, we got some reaction from members of the church here in Ireland and many of them were saying, you know, they're very happy to see his ascension to the office of Pope, but they didn't expect him to get it. Is it a surprise?
I have to say I was a little bit gobsmacked myself, although for National Catholic Reporter's list of front runners, we did have him on the list and say that of all the Americans, he probably had the best chance. In part, that's because he hasn't spent his entire life in the United States. He is truly a global citizen in many ways. So I think that probably helped him in the election.
Yeah, indeed. One of our previous guests was saying they believe he was probably the least American of all the American candidates to be Pope. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think that's the way he's going to be described, as the least American-American.
What do you think would be his views when it compares to those of Pope Francis about what the US administration is doing? I know Pope Francis was as outspoken as he could be without naming names when he criticised J.D. Vance in his February letter to US bishops.
Yes, I believe one of my colleagues has found a social media post from Cardinal Prevost about that very topic where he was correcting the vice president as well. I think the fact that he mentioned and thanked Francis in his brief remarks shows that I think this is a pope who will be more in the vein of Francis than not. And so we're very optimistic about that here in the United States.
He may be the least American of all the American candidates, but he is American nonetheless. How will this be greeted, do you think, in the United States?
Well, I can tell you that already I'm hearing from so many Chicagoans who are excited to hear that he's a native son of our city. He was born in the South Suburbs, attended Catholic schools here, is a graduate of the Catholic Theological Union, which is also in Hyde Park on the South Side. Already they're speculating whether he supports the North Side or South Side baseball team, the Cubs or the Sox. So I know there's a lot of enthusiasm about it. And it just does seem like with a quick relatively quick election that there seems to be some unity around him, which I think will be good for the church.
Yeah, as well as that, he also has the international appeal, and we saw in the speech that he gave there to St. Peter's Square, he's obviously bilingual, he can speak Italian, he can speak Spanish, he is an international pope.
Yes, and he gave his remarks in Spanish and spoke directly to the people of his diocese in Peru. I think that that really speaks to what the church is today. It's a global church, and we all are in this together as one global church. So that's very encouraging to me as well.
Heidi, thank you very much for joining us. That is Heidi Schlumpf there, who's senior correspondent with the National Catholic Reporter.